Chapter 3. Conscious Fabrication. Deliberate fabrication, like other patterns of human behavior, is likely to have a goal, the satisfaction of certain human needs. Arrogation of prophethood may thus be motivated either by some material benefit or by the aspiration to status, glory, and power. We may as well investigate these two possibilities. A. Fabrication for material gains. Is it reasonable to assert that Muhammad, peace be upon him, might have claimed prophethood in order to attain some material gains? This question may be answered by looking into his financial status before and after prophethood. Before his mission as a prophet, Muhammad had no financial worries. His loving and rich wife, Khadija, had made available to him all what he needed. As a successful and reputed merchant, Muhammad, peace be upon him, drew a satisfactory and comfortable income. It is ironic that the same man, after his mission as a prophet and because of it, became worse off materially. Describing their life, his wife, Aisha, narrated that a month or two might have elapsed before fire was lit in the prophet's house to cook a meal, while the household subsisted on milk and dates. After 18 years of his mission, when Muslims were the victorious, we still find a kind of revolt in Muhammad's household, in protest of the difficult life characterized by a considerable self-imposed material deprivation. This incident took place at the time when the Muslim treasury was under his disposal. Asked about Muhammad's bedding, his wife Hafsa answered, "It comprised of a piece of canvas which I spread double-folded under him. Once I did it fourfold to make it more comfortable. The next morning he asked me, 'What did you spread under me last night?' I replied, 'The same canvas, but I had fourfolded it instead of the customary double-fold.' He said, 'Keep it as it was before. The additional softness stands in the way of the night prayer.'" When Umar ibn al-Khattab went to see Muhammad, peace be upon him, he noticed that the contents of his room comprised of only 3 pieces of tanned skin and a handful of barley lying in a corner. He narrates, "I looked about, but I failed to find anything else. I began to weep." He said, "Why are you weeping?" I replied, "O Prophet of Allah, why should I not weep? I can see the mat's pattern imprinted on your body, and I am also beholding all that you have got in this room. O Prophet of Allah, pray that Allah may grant ample provisions for us. The Persians and the Romans who have no true faith and who worship not Allah but their kings, the Kaisers and the Caesars, should live in gardens with streams running in their midst. But the chosen prophet and the accepted slave of Allah should live in such dire poverty?" The prophet, peace be upon him, was resting against his pillow. But when he heard me talk like this, he sat against his pillow and said, "O Umar, are you still in doubt about this matter? Ease and comfort in the hereafter are much better than ease and comfort in this world." In a long narrative by Bilal about what Muhammad, peace be upon him, did with the gifts and provisions he received, Bilal reported that the Prophet never kept back anything for future use, that he spent what he had on the poor and needy, and that on one occasion, Muhammad, peace be upon him, received a gift of 4 loaded camels, yet he took nothing for himself. And he further insisted that he would not go home until the whole lot was given away to the needy. At the time of his death, and in spite of all his victories and achievements, Muhammad, peace be upon him, was in debt, and his shield was in the hands of a Jewish citizen of Medina as a collateral for that debt. One may then inquire, are there any indications of materialistic motives behind Muhammad's claim of prophethood? B. Fabrication for worldly glory and power. Is it possible that Muhammad, peace be upon him, might have claimed prophethood in order to attain status, worldly greatness, and power? The desire to enjoy status and power is usually associated with good food, fancy clothing, monumental palaces, colorful guards, and indisputable authority. Do any of these indicators apply to Muhammad? Following are a few glimpses of his life that may help answer this question. Despite his responsibilities as a prophet, a teacher, a statesman, and a judge, Muhammad, peace be upon him, used to milk his goat, mend his clothes, repair his shoes, and help with the household work. His life was an amazing model of simplicity and humbleness. He sat on the floor, went to the market to shop with no guards or procession. He talked and listened patiently and politely to anyone who stopped him. And he accepted invitations to dine with the poor and ate graciously whatever was served to him. Once he was traveling with some of his companions, who began to prepare to cook some food by dividing the work among themselves. Muhammad, peace be upon him, suggested to be in charge of collecting some wood. His companions told him that they could do it for him. Muhammad, peace be upon him, answered back, "I know you could do it for me, but I hate to have any privilege over you." A stranger once came to him almost trembling out of respect. Muhammad, peace be upon him, asked the man to come closer to him, and with a compassionate pat on the man's shoulder, he told him, "Relax, brother. I am only the son of a woman who used to eat dried bread." Muhammad's use of authority is quite revealing. His followers loved him, respected him, and trusted him to an amazing extent. Yet, he continued to emphasize that devotion should be directed to God and not to him personally. As a matter of fact, he made a clear distinction between the specific revelations he received from God and other areas left to human discretion. In the latter category, evidence of Muhammad's consultative attitudes is ample. In planning for the defense of Medina before the Battle of the Trench, Muhammad, peace be upon him, asked for the advice of his companions and decided in favor of Salman's proposal to dig a trench around Medina. Furthermore, he started working with his hands like any other man in his company. A similar behavior was demonstrated in the Battle of Badr. In addition to the simple, humble, and altruistic life of Muhammad, peace be upon him, one may also ask, was there any indication in his early life that demonstrates his aspiration for leadership and fame? Critics of Muhammad, peace be upon him, failed to provide any evidence that he planned or aspired to leadership and fame. Even a writer who goes into great length to support his guess that Muhammad probably had some secret desires to be famous cannot help but admit that Muhammad was not guilty of planning for his role as a prophet. Not only was Muhammad, peace be upon him, an ordinary and a quiet person, but he even trembled and rushed home in terror when he received the first revelation as a prophet of God. If he were planning or aspiring for fame, he would have come down happy and jubilant that his secret desires were finally coming true. Andre's theory of secret desires and similar theories are perhaps modern versions of the pagan Arabs' initial interpretation of Muhammad's motives, peace be upon him. Long before there was any prospect of success of the new faith, and at the outset of a long and painful era of torture, suffering, and persecution of Muhammad and his followers, he received an interesting offer. An envoy of the pagan leaders, Uqba, came to him saying, "If you want money, we will collect enough money for you so that you will be the richest one of us. If you want leadership, we will take you as our leader and never decide on any matter without your approval. If you want kingship, we will crown you king over us. And if you can't resist the visions that come to you, we will spend all that is needed to seek a cure for you." Only one concession was required from Muhammad, peace be upon him, in return for that: to stop dividing the people and to give up this new claim that there is nothing worthy of worship except God. This was not a high price if Muhammad, peace be upon him, were pursuing his own benefit. Was Muhammad, peace be upon him, hesitant when the offer was made? Did he turn it down as a bargaining strategy, leaving the door open for a better offer? His answer was to recite the first 13 verses of chapter 41. Another narration is that he recited up to verse 38. The following are the first four verses.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم حم تنزيل من الرحمن الرحيم كتاب فصلت آياته قرآنا عربيا لقوم يعلمون بشيرا ونذيرا فأعرض أكثرهم فهم لا يسمعون.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, most merciful. Hameem. This is a revelation from the most compassionate, most merciful. It is a book whose verses are perfectly explained, a Quran in Arabic for people who know, delivering good news and warning. Yet, most of them run away and so do not hear. Quran 41:1-4. The listener is encouraged to read the whole of chapter 41. On another occasion, and in response to his uncle's plea for compromise, Muhammad's answer, peace be upon him, was as decisive and sincere. Do you see this, son? I am no more capable of abandoning my mission than you are of bringing down a flame from the sun. History tells us that not only did Muhammad and his few followers suffer all kinds of torture and sacrifice for 13 years, but that Muhammad, peace be upon him, was about to physically perish several times because of his steadfastness. Are these the characteristics of a power-hungry or self-centered man? What could justify such a life of suffering and sacrifice even after he was fully triumphant over his adversaries? What could explain the humbleness and nobility which he demonstrated in his most glorious moments when he insisted that success is due only to God's help and not to his own genius?